VanCast to finish up the week in the wake of a 4-1 loss for the Vancouver Canucks in Calgary. Tom, the Canucks with one goal now in their past two games, two goals in their last eight periods. But we should start the podcast by congratulating the city of Calgary. You've won the first of these four completely meaningless games against the Canucks. So a hearty congratulations to the fine people of Cowtown.
Perhaps it's no consolation for another season off the rails for the Calgary Flames, but, you know, they have taken a 1-0 lead in a historic series, pitting two opponents playing for absolutely nothing.
Now, it is going to be historic here. It isn't quite yet, because there were other games played around them last night, but I know you've done a little digging. This is what you do for the VIPs, that when the Canucks and the Flames play Sunday night, and then they play again on Tuesday and Wednesday during the middays, this will be completely unprecedented in the history of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I went through every NHL season schedule on hockeyreference.com yesterday, went all the way back to 1918, and as far as I can tell, over the last 103 years of NHL hockey, never before have regular season games been played after the commencement of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I thought like maybe in World War II or like maybe before commercial air travel, like you would have had, you know, just once they did it for whatever reason. Nope, never happened before. And that makes sense. Like, why would you do this? You know, like why would you do this? But obviously this season's demanded that the league be unusually flexible. And so that brings us to where we're at, which is, you know, a really weird situation for the NHL and for the Canucks in particular.
And it looked like it for much of the night. We won't get into it too deeply, but that feels like banner material for Rogers Arena, not banner material for flying behind a plane, because some people like to do that in Vancouver as well. But I'm talking about Rogers Arena banner material. Never before has a team played regular season games underneath the playoffs.
Yeah, forget meaningful games into March. How about meaningless games into the playoffs? it's going to be weird, man. And the players, like Myers admitted that it was strange. Most players, I've been asking this of almost every player that comes up for like a couple of days, because this has just been on my radar as something that I think is so nuts. Or not nuts, but just unprecedented. Like, I also think it's trivial in the big picture. And obviously, there's so much at stake over a 56-game season, and having 32-member clubs or 31-member clubs complete a 56-game schedule matters for a ton of reasons, including player pay and proration and on down the list. But, you know, Myers admitted it was strange. Most players are just being gamely about it. But you know, regardless of what anyone says, when the playoffs have begun and they've watched playoff highlights on Saturday night and then come to the rink to play on Sunday morning before additional games take place that evening, it is going to be strange. No way around it.
All right, so I don't want to waste a whole lot of the pod time here or the VIP's time getting into great details in a 4-1 loss that looked a lot and felt like exhibition hockey, or I saw some saying kind of had the spirit of an all-star game. So I think what we do is we sum it up in four pretty random observations. I've got two. I'll give you the floor for two as well. And then we can move on. And I'll start by Jimmy Vesey hit a guy hard.
Yeah, he did. I liked Jimmy Vesey's game last night. I did. I also liked that Travis Green was fired up about the calls. I appreciated that. Sorry. So that's your observation. Now I go?
Yep.
Olli Olevi marauding around the net on was it the Mangiapane goal?
It was, yeah.
That was shades of Keith Ballard. We don't need, how much more of this do we need to see before we realize that it's going to be, like, it's going to be tough for Olevi to be in the lineup ahead of Jack Rathbone in the years ahead? Like, we know that already, don't we?
Yeah, I think we do. And I wonder how much he recognizes it in the moment here that, like, already in the court of public opinion in this market, like, people have seen enough of Jack Rathbone to, you know, slide him ahead of this guy. And all Olevi wants to do is play. The problem is when he plays and he makes that kind of read and that kind of decision, Not so good. Not so much. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question in what people have seen from Jack Rathbone. It's more of the reaction is like, I want to see more, like serve it up. And with Ulevi, it's kind of like, all right, I'm good. I've seen enough.
No. I still think this market has time for the stretch passes.
Oh, maybe. But, you know, the decision and the read on that play, I mean, it counters any tape-to-tape stretch pass that he makes in a game like last night.
I'm very serious. You're going to have a whole summer of like, yeah, Rathbone's more dynamic, but Ulevi's steadier. Like, they need to find minutes for both. And it's like, no, they actually need to upgrade the left side and slot, you know, a competition between the two for next season with, you know, the other guy being the seventh. You know, that's sort of it. Like, you need more help on the left side, whether it's Edler or someone else, but probably more than Edler. And yeah, anyway, this one should be case closed pretty quickly here.
All right. My other observation was, despite Tyler Myers post game talking about how proud he was of the group for fighting hard to the bitter end, the Canucks had two shots on goal in the third period. And it was a 2-1 hockey game for most of the third period.
There wasn't
a whole lot there.
No, wasn't a whole lot there. Hamonic Hughes, I still have time for that pair. I thought they had a decent game, all things considered. Wasn't a good night for the Canucks overall, in my view anyway. I sort of don't buy the big bounce back performance, but Hamonic Hughes, they were effective once again last night. I think there's a good case to be made that, you know, if you can get Hamonic in at the right number, that might be a quick way to shore up your top four and leave your focus elsewhere in terms of upgrading this defense core, which is absolutely a top line item. But I like their game again. I think they've had a lot of solid games actually over the past 25. A rare bright spot for the club.
Yeah, I wasn't sold on Hamonic early, and then he got hurt. And I think since he's come back from the injury and broken ribs, like, you know, that's nothing but time there. You got to let that heal. And so he missed a bunch of time. And when you think of the hurdles of missing the camp and not playing for a year, like, I think since the broken ribs and settling in with Hughes, I'm with you. Like, I'm fine with Hamonic. And again, he's only 30. Like, you know, there's still some life left in Travis Hamonic, where we're talking about Alex Edler and how much is, you know, left, how much tread is left on the tires there. Like, Hamonic's 30 and basically coming off a full year away from the game. So I think he's been fine. And I'm kind of with you that if he's back next year and that's a pairing, I can probably live with that. The loss last night, the Canucks are now 5-10 in 15 games since the COVID outbreak, just 2 wins in 11. I think we kind of set the line around 5, didn't we? When there were 19 games to go. And I think we both kind of agreed that 5, maybe 5.5 would be the line if you were setting it. And here they are, 5-10 through 15 games, so 4 to go, and we'll see how they play out. I want to touch quickly on, because Travis Green, I thought, did a nice job yesterday sort of laying out the reasons why Jonah Gadjevich wasn't in the lineup and hasn't played yet for the Vancouver Canucks, despite being moved on to Winnipeg. You tweeted this out as well. You're the smart guy on this podcast. I just do a nice job of setting you up for these answers. But I had some people say they still didn't understand, because if Gadjevich was one of the four call-ups, why couldn't he play? And I think people are missing the taxi squad step in all of this year, right?
Yeah, he was recalled to the taxi squad. That's not what the four recalls are. The four recalls govern your transition from the American League, and the taxi squad is sort of like purgatory, a midway point between the AHL and the NHL for this season. So he was recalled to the taxi squad, but that doesn't burn one of your four recalls. It's putting him on the roster that burns a recall. The Canucks burned recalls on Ulevi, on Lind, on Rathbone, one other, I think it was Graevac. So they're out of recalls. By the way, another contender for my fourth observation, if you'd gone with one of mine, was Graevac for Unsung Hero. Like, how hard is this guy working? How hard is this guy working? Just leaving it all out there. Good for him.
Yeah, and I've got time for any guy that sees an opportunity and tries to make the most of it. You know,
grinds away.
He's still a tweener. He's, you know, but if he's the number one center on the Abbotsford, whatever they are, next year, and he's still in the organization, like, I've got time for that. If he's a guy that plays the role of depth center and gets the recall and in a pinch, and even last year, like when he came up, I mean, he played 8 or 9 games, but he's, you know, power play time. He scored a couple of goals. Like, I'm fine with Tyler Greivac. And yeah, absolutely, the effort should be applauded.
Yes, I just wanted to note that. But yeah, no, the recall thing, you know, the Canucks had 19 games post-deadline. They burned 4 recalls. Like, that happens. It is what it is. I mean, I don't think you can really find too much fault with a team that had this type of run of injuries and went through their 4 recalls, personally, especially because they did burn most of those recalls on guys like Cole Lind, on young players. It's not like these recalls were burned on guys who are, you know, not potentially part of this club's future, or guys that they needed sort of answers to on can they play. Like, I think you got a lot of information from the 6 games Cole Lind played, right? Like, yeah, you're not going to be too upset or too miffed if you don't use a protected slot on him, right? Like, I think that's good to know. So, you know, anyway, all for calling out little bits of inefficiency in Canucks management. I just don't think this was one where the club deserved to get dunked on. And that was the popular reaction yesterday. I think that was a misunderstanding on the fans' perspective.
So I just want to take a sec here, and I think this is instructive. And a lot of our VIPs would have been with the Canucks a decade ago when they were the President's Trophy winners. The Colorado Avalanche have clinched the President's Trophy. As we spend so much time, Tom, and really the Canuck fan base and Canucks Twitter, and everybody wants the same goal, and that is to see the Canucks get good and to be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And I just want to point this out. There were higher scoring teams in the National Hockey League this year, not by a lot, but Colorado ends up winning the President's Trophy. Mikko Rantanen had 30 goals. Mm-hmm. He led the Avs with 30 goals in the regular season. MacKinnon and Landeskog had 20 apiece. Burakovsky had 19. Donskoy had 17. Saad had 15. Kadri had 11. Kompfer and Nikushkin each had 10. Pierre-Edouard Belmar had 9. And then you get 2 defensemen, Devon Taves and Cale Makar. Taves had 9, and Makar had 8. So they had a 30 and 220 goal scorers, and then guys that you would sort of, you know, depth on that team, 19, 17, 15, where the Canucks have a 20 goal scorer in Brock Besser, and Bo Horvat has 17.
Yep. Yep. Like, well, yeah.
That's where the Canucks have to get to.
Totally. Well, and it's beyond just that. It's like Pierre-Edouard Belmar is their fourth line center. Like, it's not just adding the talent. It's creating an environment and a supporting cast where even the guys who aren't paid to score goals, you know, like where even your stoppers are also threats to score, right? Like, that's what the Canucks have really not had in certainly Pedersen's time in Vancouver. That's where you need to get to. You need to have, you know, you can't have your bottom six be sort of punting 25 minutes a game, 5-on-5, where you're just like holding the fort and hoping you don't give up goals against. Like, you need to be a threat to do damage in those minutes too. And that's something the Canucks need a lot of work to get to. Like, that's not going to come overnight.
Travis Green basically said what I think we all figured, and that is that we're not likely to see Elias Pettersson over these remaining games, although he didn't come right out and say, no, it's not going to happen. Like, he didn't say we are shutting him down.
We'll see. We'll see.
I know. You still cling to this.
I'm just skeptical. I just, like, it's $580K. That's a lot of money, man. It's a lot of money. Like, if you're an NHL player on an entry-level deal, he's earning $900K prorated this season by 70%. Like, that's almost double his income for this year.
Now, Travis did say, like, he followed it up. He said he's not likely to play again, but then he said he's going to miss the final 30. He said 31. It would ultimately be 30.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think he's not going to play at this point. But
I like the fact that you've kind of been hanging on to this. That,
well, it's just a spidey sense. It's a spidey sense tingling. I've just seen guys do everything they can to come back to earn their bonuses. Like, I've seen this movie before. And there's certain, like, precepts that I sort of cling to in analyzing and viewing the game. It's pattern recognition, right? It's based on my experience. And, you know, miraculous returns to hit a bonus, like, those are things I've seen before. And that I sort of cling to as instructive. So, that's it. It's just my spidey sense tingling. We'll see on Sunday.
And I will give you full credit. Like, it's a great take. If he if he shows up, and we'll see. I mean, he's not going to be in Edmonton on Saturday, so you're right. It's the home games, and there will be three games, well, two at home, one back on the road in Calgary to finish up on Wednesday. So we'll see where it goes. What do we make? Like, I've had some people say, and I'm sure you've seen it as well, like, what do we make then, ultimately, of Elias Pettersson's season? I mean, it's 26 games right now, 10 goals, 11 assists, 21 points. We know that he struggled out of the gate for whatever reason. I was just looking back at his year yesterday, I'd kind of forgotten the, you know, he had 1 point in the first six games. He had an assist on opening night. Besser scored, and he had that bank pass assist to Besser on opening night. That was his only point in the first six games. Took him 7 games to score. He had 2 points through the first 8 games. And then I had forgotten that in the 5 games that took him up to the injury, he had 5 goals in those 5 games. Like, he was starting to come on when he got hurt, which was unfortunate. But ultimately, like, does this season and the way it played out for Elias Pettersson, does it impact his leverage in any way with this contract?
It does. It does a little bit. But I still think you're looking at a guy who's going to have, you know, 0.9 points per game over the life of his entry-level deal. The team struggled enormously without him. You know, he's got a credible claim to be, like, the reason for hope for the franchise. You know what I mean? Like, he clearly electrified this market in a pretty significant way over the past 3 years. And then he produced in the playoffs last year, right? Like, that's a big one that he's going to have, too, a feather in his cap, as it were. You know, so, I mean, I still think he probably beats the Barzal comp. Does this injury sort of take him out of the, like, 8.5 range on a bridge deal? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it does. But I don't think it's a significant, like, I don't think this is going to significantly relax his valuation by any means. And more than that, I think the Canucks, in terms of, you know, maintaining that relationship and thinking long term, will still be, you know, almost certainly looking to do a bridge deal, because I don't see how they have cap space to go long, frankly. But you know, I don't think this is going to be like, I don't think he's sort of been so injury prone or whatever over the life of his entry level deal that you're now going to be able to sort of shave $1 million off his cap hit. I still think you're looking at 7.5 sort of on the low end.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So the question I've got for you, Tom, is just how many times can Tyler Toffoli dunk on the Vancouver Canucks? It's just, like, it's incredible. Like, every time it seems like it's taken to another level.
And it's 1998 Vince Carter.
Oh, it really is. Like, it's, I said on the radio,
top,
like,
sanity.
I feel like he's in a one-man dunk competition, and it's just, like, you know, windmill after windmill with the odd tomahawk thrown in there and around the back, whatever the case.
But it wasn't malicious.
I know, but that kind,
like,
of
that's,
adds
that's
to
the
it.
Worst part of it. It's just like, it's just like straight dunk. Factual. Like, this is my story. And people are like, no, why? No.
But everybody knows his story, it seems. But every time there's, like, another layer added to it. Like, there's little bits and pieces that feel, you know, like the ran out of time when Jim said that. Like, that was, you know, that was a Toffoli story, but that was the takeaway from that one. I mean, we've talked at length on the pod about that Monday of Thanksgiving weekend when people saw that he was going to Montreal, and then they saw the dollar figure, and it was lower this year than Brandon Sutter was making. And again, the anger that day, like, that has stuck with me all these months later. You know, there was the goal scoring rampage in that Canucks first homestand that kind of was funny. It was funny at first. And it kind of, that's where we are again.
Like, I loved the story of the Canucks' reaction. So good. But also for me, like, you know, I think Toffoli liked it here and liked a lot of the guys on that team. And I think that was a mutual thing, right? Like, Pearson and him are close, obviously, but JT Miller, and that group, like, JT Miller, Pearson, Toffoli had become really close. I think Bo Horvat and Toffoli had become close. I think Toffoli earned a lot of respect in that room for the way that he recovered ahead of time from, you know, the ankle injury that he sustained in the bubble. I think it was apparent that he was a great fit on PP1 and with both Pettersson and Horvat. And look, he's a cup winner, right? Like there was a level of belief in what they were doing together as a group after the bubble. And I think when it detonated, I think there was disappointment. Like, I don't think this is a secret. I think the players were disappointed. And, you know, I still come back. Like, the moment of the season for me is Toffoli getting robbed by Demko on the hat trick right. goal after he'd scored a hat trick in his first game against the Canucks. And he's got a chance to go back-to-back hat tricks. He's got two goals, and he gets robbed late by Demko. And he just looks to the sky and yells, "Fuck!" Like, he was so mad that he had missed out on a second straight hat trick in, like, a 5-2 game. And it was like, that just tells you everything about, you know, what he wanted, right? Like, how he felt. Yeah, I mean, it's an unforced error, right? Like, an unforced error of epic proportions. And I think one that will be talked about in this marketplace for years to come, particularly in the event that Toffoli doesn't regress significantly over the life of his current deal.
Right, it's going to be talked about. It could be talked about next week. Like, what if he gets on one of those heaters, as he's prone to do? Like, what if Tyler Toffoli is the driving force that leads the Montreal Canadiens to a shocking first-round upset of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
LOL. Like,
I know, like, the story's not going away.
No, I mean, LOL, that's not going to happen, don't worry.
I understand that. I don't expect it to either, but...
People are like, Habs in six, look at their goaltending! It's like... I don't know if you've watched Jack Campbell and Carey Price play this year, but I wouldn't necessarily just assume that Montreal has the edge in net.
Wait, we'll get to our playoff predictions here to wrap things up in a few minutes' time. So hold on to some playoff talk, because there's a couple of things that I want to get to before we do that. And on the outside now, looking in, like, I'll be watching Toffoli in the playoffs just to see, because Montreal is obviously going to need him to be relevant, but I'm with you, and I don't want to get into playoff predictions at this stage. I don't think we can let the two Johns have all the fun, Shorty and Cheech, and full credit to them, like, because we've talked about these games mean nothing, and yet they still seem like they're having the time of their lives calling these Canuck games, and I think that's a real skill and a full credit to them, right? Like, we had them on right yeah. before the season, and it was a blast, and it was great to hear them, and we hadn't heard from them for a while, and I think people enjoyed that podcast, and I give these guys credit. Like, you know, they know that it's an entertainment product, and there isn't a whole lot of entertainment these days. So it was so on point to see Cheech constructing his roster using a hamburger as the medium.
The burger template, the burger blueprint, I think I called it. Yeah. I love that. What a great segment. I was literally crying laughing on my television. It was probably the moment of the game that I reacted to the strongest, and I suspect I'm not alone.
No, I got a ton of play. Wyatt jumped all over it in the armies, as I figured he would. If people missed it, and I don't know how they would have, Cheech had Horvat and Besser as the patties in his hamburger. Mm-hmm. He had Edler and Myers as slightly toasted buns. I would suggest that those two get burnt on occasion, but that's just me.
Yep.
And then was it Hoglander and Miller were the garnishes?
Yeah, we're the spicy guys.
Right.
I love that. I love that.
Where were Petey and Quinn? Like, how can you have a hamburger if you're building the organization? Did I miss that, or were they just not part of his burger?
Well, I think because of how Cheech values ketchup, I assume they were the ketchup.
See, like,
the most integral part.
Right. Like, so if I'm coming at it, I would, you know, no problem. We had burgers for dinner last night. I'm not opposed to burgers, but I would go with, like, a roast beef sandwich myself, I think. And I would have EP40 and Hughes. They were like the grade A prime beef. I'd have Horvat as, like, a 9-grain bread, right? Like, good, solid, hearty, integral part of any sandwich. You got to have the bread. You know, Brock Besser would be a smooth piece of cheese for me, and I'm all about cheese. And then I would add some flavor. Miller would be a spicy mustard, I think.
Mm.
I got Hoglander as a pickle, and I like pickles. Like, that, you need a pickle.
Yeah, me too. You need some acid.
Right. So that's not a shot at Nils Hoglander. I like pickle. I like a good pickle. Oh, yeah. In fact,
it's the most important part for me. Like,
and then the bottom six are all just like the plain potato chips that, like, you just kind of scatter on the plate to round out. You know, there's empty calories. There's not a whole lot there. So that's how I'm building my Canucks roast beef sandwich.
Fair enough. So I'm thinking about it more like hat tip to Tim Schaller. I'm thinking about it more like an Earl's Dynamite roll, right? So okay. it's like my model for team construction is like a Dynamite roll. So you've got your core, and your core are the tempura shrimp. And, you know, the Canucks have 5 pieces of tempura shrimp and a loaded Dynamite roll. And it's Miller, Hughes, Besser, Horvat, Pettersson. You know, that for me is like a core group, right? That's PP1. You know what? Let's throw Demko in there. 6 pieces of shrimp. Those are core guys. That's like the core nucleus that you want to build around, right? And then you throw in some like Tobiko, some cucumber, some of the like garnishes. And for me, that's like, you know, low cost, low cal. Well, Tobiko's not, but like that's sort of like delicious. And you need it to really make the Dynamite roll good, but it's not integral. It's just like a useful compliment. And for me, that's guys like Jack Rathbone, Nils Höglander, Vasily Podkolzin, but that's like cheap ELC guys. And then, you know, you do the inverted rice wrap. And for me, that is the rest of the team. That is your depth. That is your like cap compliant, you know, low risk bets. And like the key with that is that it's a thin band of rice. It's not like if you get too much rice in a sushi roll, right? Like that's what the Canucks basically are now. It's a lot of rice. It's like hard to eat. It's a little gummy. Yeah. It sort of impinges on the amount of good stuff that you can get in the middle. So you need a thin roll of efficient rice that sort of ties it all together and makes it this like delicious, efficient bite under the salary cap. So for me, an Earl's Dynamite roll, a hat tip to our buddy Tim. That is the food analogy that I'm using in building out my blueprint.
That's good. I like that. It's very West Coast. It's local. I think you described it well. So there you go. I hope Cheech is okay. Like this is sort of a tribute to Cheech. We're not trying to upstage him in any way, but I wanted to add our own little flair to the way the Canucks could build out their roster with food. And so I am looking forward to seeing what the two Johns have left here. I had suggested when I saw that those final two games were scheduled for back-to-back middle of the day. Like, honestly, at some point, I would love the cameras to turn to the Johns in the booth at Rogers Arena and let us watch John Garrett eat a lunch. Like, take 5 minutes away from the play and we can all watch John. We all heard, I've witnessed it, you've witnessed it out on the road, but the people generally have. I would love that, or an intermission. Like, John Garrett has lunch.
So I'm going to report this in a column that I think I'll run Saturday. So I'll scoop myself a little bit here. But my understanding, actually, I've got this confirmed from Sportsnet. Tuesday and Wednesday's games will be Flames regional broadcasts picked up nationally. So the Sportsnet Pacific crew, with the regional obligations presumably already being met by the Canucks in terms of the broadcast schedule, those games will be done by the Flames regional crew and not by the Johns, which is, you know, too bad. I mean, clearly a flair for the ability to make those games like watchable, conversational, communal, despite sort of their meaninglessness. Unfortunately, Vancouver fans will not get to hear Shorty and Garrett call those games.
Well, that's too bad. Rick Ball and Kelly Rudy, I imagine, although Kelly may be on Hockey Night in Canada duties, sometimes leaves maybe Cassie Campbell, but it'll be Rick Ball, and Rick's a total pro, and people here know that name and remember mm-hmm. him from his time calling Canuck games. But that's just, you know, the final one particularly, like you would want your local guys, I would think, to put a bow on the season, whether it's a disastrous season like this one or a mediocre season, whatever, you're lacking something there if you don't have your own local guys.
Absolutely.
So that's too bad.
It is too bad.
We always talk at the end of our pods here, Tom. I read that line about, leave us a comment in our comment section. I posted this yesterday and it got a ton of traction on social media. It came from Josh H. And I only posted a part of it, but I wanted to read the entire thing here quickly because it's addressed to you. It says, Drancer, I appreciate your honest and unflinching analysis of the current state of affairs, and I agree Benning needs to go before he digs this hole any deeper, but I don't think the situation is as dire as you sometimes portray. And this was the paragraph I posted. The Canucks have a legitimate top line, the makings of a nice second line with Horvat and Hoglander, a franchise D-man in Hughes, and a franchise goalie. The only bad contract beyond next season is Myers, maybe Schmidt, Pods, and Rathbone could potentially fill top six and top four roles as well. So they have tons of important pieces in place. They just need to eat shit for one more year before they can build a supporting cast. It's such a pivotal time for the franchise. I really hope someone more competent is at the helm soon. We talked about banners hanging at Rogers Arena. That doesn't sound like a great marketing slogan to me, eat shit for one more year, but what do you make of Josh's assessment?
Yeah, I mean, look, Josh, thanks for the kind words. And I mean, I think this goes down to the biggest question that you have to deal with, I think, in analyzing this team in this season, right? Which is, it now looks apparent, like very clear, in my view anyway, that the Canucks are going to finish seventh in the North, right? But you have to ask yourself, are we that bad? Is this team that bad, right? Like, are the Canucks the worst team in the North? Are they, on true talent, genuinely worse than the Flames? And no. Than the Flames, yes. Than the Senators. And the answer is no. At least not this season. Although, I think you could see with the Senators sort of where things were trending, right? Like, that team was looking good. Now, here's the problem. The Canucks are really not very good, right? Like, they really are not very good. This team was bottom five in the NHL by shot attempt differential before. This is all before the COVID outbreak. Bottom five in terms of shot differential. They'd been outscored by 14 at 5-on-5. They were the seventh worst team in the NHL by expected goals. Like, there's a ton of indicators suggesting that, you know, this team was really not very good. In terms of the percentages, too, like, they had a slightly lower than expected shooting percentage, but otherwise were basically, you know, 99.3 PDO. Maybe you get a few more goals next season. But, I mean, they were not sabotaged by bad luck before the COVID outbreak. Like, they basically had got what they deserved. And where were they at the COVID outbreak? Like, the only stretch of the season in which they played well above 500 hockey, they needed like 970 goaltending to accomplish that, right? Like, this is not a team that's making its own fate one way or another. They are completely beholden to eking out wins on the back of elite goaltending and great special teams. Like, that leaves you no margin for error as they're currently constructed. Do I think Jack Rathbone could be a top four down the line? I do. Do I think he can be a top four in the next 2 years? I don't think you want to count on it. Like, I think you want him to be your stud third pair guy. You know what I mean? And slowly break into a role where he's playing more matchup minutes. Like, I'd even note that in the second, like, he's played four games, right? The second two, he played more frequently against top six competition. And his 5-on-5 profile was not too pretty, right? Like, it was not the way it looked after two games where, you know, he'd crushed sort of bottom of the lineup competition. Like, that's what you want him to be doing. You want him to be put in a position to succeed. And it's the same with, like, Hoglander's had a magnificent season. But how much, like, on a good team, Hoglander is driving things for a third line, not doing his best to keep his head above water on a second line. And when you look at what Hoglander accomplished in terms of play driving and offensive production this season, it's tremendous. When you look, however, at his defensive results, like, he was in over his head. Podkolzin could be a unique two-way player, I think. I think Podkolzin really has the ability to be maybe a defensive stud if his skating plays up at the NHL level. But that's, like, no one comes in and is a stud defensive player in the NHL at 21. You know, like, there's Sasha Barkov, there's, like, some guys like Logan Couture, but it's, like, extraordinarily rare. Like, it's not rare to see young players make a difference at the NHL level. What's really rare is for your Taveses, your Coutures, or your Barkovs to be, like, stud. Like, even Couturier wasn't really, like, an elite defensive player until 22, 23, right? Like, Podkolzin's years away from being the type of player that's, like, the perfect fit for Horvat's wing. Like, I hear this all the time, and it's, like, sure, but not next season. Like, next season, ideally, he plays, like, fourth line minutes, right? Like, if you have a guy like Podkolzin on a fourth line, you know what I'm saying? Then you've got like a high energy, high upside player. You might score 10 goals on your fourth line, like plays some PP2, moves up the lineup after 50 games if he deserves it. You know, like that's the Bo Horvat development model as opposed to the Jared McCann, Jake Virtanen development model we saw just the next season. Like, which do you prefer, Canucks fans? Like, which have we seen work and which have we seen not? You know, you can't count too much on young guys. And even when it works, even when that player exceeds expectations to like the 99th percentile, as Hoglander did, you can still see the seams from a player being put in an unfavorable position. I think that's what you're looking at with Rathbone and Podkolzin. Like, his team needs so much more. I think they need a fundamental reconstruction of the blue line. I think they need a fundamental reconstruction of the bottom six. I think they need a high-end third-line center. And yeah, I mean, there's for sure no way they're going to be able to accomplish all of that next offseason or this offseason. But I even think beyond that, it's going to be dicey to do, especially because we're talking about Pettersson and Hughes taking up most of their cap space for this summer now. Then we're going to be talking about Besser. Then we're going to be talking about Miller and Horvat. And the next year, we're going to be talking probably about Pettersson and Hughes again. And then the next summer, we're going to be talking about Demko. And it's just like, it's this sort of conveyor belt that the team's always going to be balancing. I just don't see enough of a critical mass of good players pushing from beneath. Like, Rathbone and Podkolzin is kind of the end of a conveyor belt that the team's had going for 4 years. And it's like, I don't see the next guys are going to have to come from this draft class, right? Like, there's no... Like, we've seen Lind. Like, we've seen that first step. I don't think you can be plugging... You know, I know Canucks fans love to, like, plug Cole Lind onto a third line, right? And be like, elite! It's elite! Like, it's Podkolzin, Miller,
yeah,
Lind, elite third line! It's like, oh my god, no. Stop! You know, it's not... There's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work to do in all aspects to get this club to where it needs to be close to the elite. And yeah, they do hurdle the majority of their really significant cap problems after this season. But, you know, there's still a lot of expensive pieces to retain. And I think there's a bad taste to wash out of everyone's mouth from this season. I don't think that can be understated as a significant factor. And then you have to go about grafting like 5 to 10 more good players onto this roster in a cap compliant way. That is not easy. It's not a 1 or 2 year project for me.
Just one other piece of feedback on the app as well. This is John, and he said, I'm a manager in the aged care industry. Last year during the pandemic was tough. However, watching the playoff run last season was a beaming jolt of joy and positivity. This year, however, has been the exact opposite. Listening to this podcast on Friday afternoon, driving home after a long week, all I felt was anger hurling expletives at my steering wheel. What period the period fuck? So that's John reaching out to us on the Athletic app as well. Hey, Drancer, did you know that you are talking to the Canucks Twitter Fantasy League champ right now?
Oh, really? Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
I did not know that.
Oh, well, I tweeted it out this morning.
Nice. Sorry, bud. I was too busy being regaled by Eugene Melnyk's sailing adventures. Master and Commander.
I'm not a huge fantasy league guy. I don't even remember. I got asked. The league was called Canucks Twitter. Like, it sounded, wow, like maybe I'm going to be in with all the heavyweights at Canucks Twitter. And it was. It was 20-team league. And I got invited back in November. And it was one of those snake drafts. And I got Matthews early. And I got Rantanen. And then, like, the later rounds, I got Martin Nakash. I got Jared McCann.
Nicely done.
Jacob Chychrun.
Wow, analytics team.
I won this thing with Sergei Bobrovsky and Cam Talbot as my goalies.
Wow. Well, Cam Talbot played really well.
He did. He tailed off at the end a little bit. But, yeah, I got to the point where I didn't even play Bobrovsky. I just, like, would sit him on the bench. But
oh, just like the Panthers.
Exactly. Fantasy League imitating real life. So, yes, I'm sitting here thumping myself, patting myself on the black on the back for my big Canucks Twitter.
Congratulations, man! Yes, I'm proud of you. And by the way, what we got to do next week before the final two, like on Monday of next week, we got to do a final accounting of the stake bet to set the stakes.
Well, there is one stake that's only available by special request. We call it sirloin a lot. It's the size of a boogie board. Ooh, I'll have that one. And a drink? Meatballs. Very good, sir.
Because one thing that at least we can sort of use to enjoy Tuesday and Wednesday, I think, is like the close race in the stake bet.
Right.
And I think that's a really important thing for us.
Dave sent me his DM. He had updated the spreadsheet again. And
what a
beauty. I've got a slight edge, but goals by Besser.
How many?
Three. But goals by Besser and Horvat now work in your favor. And there's four games to go. I mean, those guys, if they play, I mean, Travis said he might sit down some veterans, but pretty good chance with four games to go that one of those guys is going to add to his total. So this thing's not over, not by a long shot. And yes, we will continue.
Jack Rathbone in the lineup for PP1A.
When Matthew Highmore is scoring the only goal, that doesn't affect our stake bet.
No, so, it doesn't. So sorry. So I'm down by three.
Yeah.
Okay. But a Horvat goal counts for two because it swings one toward me and one away from you.
Exactly.
So I need like a goal from Besser and Horvat, and that swings it.
Yeah, and that's totally doable with four to go.
Yeah,
so something's not over, not by a long shot. I just want to take a moment.
Real close, though. Wow.
Yeah, and right now, if the season ends, I think I have Horvat and Besser like on the mark. Like I'm feeling
nicely done.
No, yes. All right, playoffs start. Even though the Canucks aren't done, and I don't think we've got anything on the line here, but let's just run through the matchups as we know them. I love this. I don't know if you picked up on this in the Canucks broadcast last night. Sportsnet running this promo about the who's going to be kings of the North. And it ends with this idea that, you know, who's going to go to the conference final? Except there's no conferences this year.
I know. I've been wondering, like, do you know how they decide who plays who?
Yeah, they reseed based on regular season point totals.
Got it. Okay.
So, you know, 1-4 and 2 will take on 3. And obviously the Canadian team right now is going to have to go south and stay south and see how it goes. So one team's going to get complete home ice advantage. The other series will go back and forth like a regular playoff series will. But I just thought that was funny in a, you know, Canadian broadcaster that who's going to go to the conference final except that.
So it actually matters then. It actually matters if the Leafs win against Edmonton. That's good. That's good to know. So it actually matters because if the Leafs.
Proceeding. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if Chalk emerged, right? So top team in every division, if top team emerged, like what you want, I think, if you're the Leafs, is to be able to, well, I guess it doesn't matter really, but ducking the Avs is good, but really what you want is to avoid whoever comes out of the Central and whoever comes out of the West and play whoever comes out of the East. I like people in the East Division, by the way, think that their division was the hardest. Do you know this?
Well, I saw you tweet about it yesterday.
But it's like non-conference, right? Like, it's like non-conference. So it's like teams are like, the Pac-10 is the best!
Right.
And then it's like they get to the tournament and they just get completely dusted by the ACC. That is the East. That is the East. It's like three of the teams that missed the playoffs had massive COVID outbreaks.
Right, yeah.
Like, the East, more than any other division, was determined by pandemic management. I'm sorry, like, very seriously, the East is the worst division of the four. People say Canada, people say it was the North, it was actually the East. Just because the Rangers are good and miss the playoffs doesn't mean that the East is a good division. It's not.
Well, let's start there then. Washington and Boston, Pittsburgh and the Islanders.
I like Pittsburgh and I like Washington.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge for Pittsburgh obviously is going to be scoring against the Islanders, and if the Islanders get a 1-0 lead, look out.
Staying interested.
In the game, not the series necessarily, although if they get the first one, that makes it interesting too. But I'm with you. I think Pittsburgh will find a way. I'm going to take Boston. Not a popular vote in Vancouver, I get that, but that seems like a bit of a toss-up to me, and so I'm going to go Boston over Washington.
Yeah, fair enough. I just don't think Boston's throwing the same fastball that they have in past seasons. That's my view of it.
No, I'm also, with you. Tuukka Rask, a bit of a wild card.
Also, the Caps feel like a team, like, I don't know. The Caps feel calibrated to be annoying in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, they just, that Tom Wilson incident just felt like the sort of thing that's going to galvanize a team in the playoffs.
Well, and so win it for Big Z, right? Like, that's just going to be the storyline.
Totally.
So we'll see where that one goes. Colorado and St. Louis, Vegas gets Minnesota. I'm going to take Colorado and Vegas. I just don't see Colorado in three. Yeah, exactly. Like, what are we doing in the first round? Like, just fast forward to the Colorado Vegas.
I actually think Vegas can be taken by Minnesota. I really do.
But will they?
I'm picking Minnesota in seven.
Really?
I am. Yeah. Wow. I think another year we are deprived of Golden Knights Avs. I do believe that. Yes. I just think, while they are clearly the two best teams in the West, there's things about the Minnesota matchup. There's things about that Minnesota dynamic. Like, that team feels so light and carefree. And as we know, nothing the Golden Knights do in the playoffs ever feels light and carefree, right? Like, I don't know.
I'm here for
the Golden Knights in the playoffs.
I'm here for your prediction, because I would love to see the fallout, right? Like, what would this year's knee-jerk reaction be from the Golden Knights, you know, in response to a first-round playoff exit at the hands of the Minnesota Wild? Like, you know that Bill Foley would freak out, and then they'd have to go, and would it be Jack Eichel? Would it be what? Like, who knows? But
right. You
know that they would just go all in to make this thing, to try to get it right for next season. All right, I want to leave Florida and Tampa for last, so we'll Kings of the North. Are we in agreement that Edmonton and Toronto are just going to mow down Winnipeg and Montreal?
Oh, yeah. I actually think Edmonton's going to have an easier time with Winnipeg than Toronto has with Montreal, and I'm not sure that Montreal wins a game. So yeah, I think that first round is going to be perfunctory.
Carolina, Nashville, do the Preds have a chance?
No.
No.
I know. I mean, maybe. Here's the one way that the Preds can win, in my view, is if UC Saros significantly outplays Ned and Mrazek. You know, I still don't really trust Carolina's goaltending, but I just think when Carolina turns up, they're the best team maybe in the league. Like, the only team that can match Colorado or Carolina when they turn up is Colorado. And one thing I will say is, like, I really don't, like, I love the Avs. I love everything they do. I think they've built a juggernaut team that plays fun hockey, but I really don't want to see a Stanley Cup winner win the, I don't want to see anyone win the cup wearing those pants. Like, I feel very strongly about this. I really think it's, you know, I don't want to see it. I just, those pants are awful. One of the things that has muted my enjoyment of hockey this season more than any other, because, like, the Avs are appointment viewing and I watch the game and I'm like, this is incredible, but those pants, I just can't get over it.
That's why Vegas has to beat Minnesota to get the pants against the gold helmets in the next round.
I feel like the bouncer in Buffalo who didn't let us into the club, J-Pat. They're like, we'd love to let you in and see you well, but man, no those jorts pants.
Here. Yes. Woo! Hey, come on. Those were not pants. Let's be honest. Those were jorts. They were the definition.
They were my dress jorts.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Let's finish up with this one. Like, forget on ice for a sec. Just the spectacle. Did you leave the state of Florida too soon?
No, but I would have loved to have worked a Panthers Lightning series. Like, that would have been an absolute highlight. I never got to work a playoff game down there. Which was too bad. You know, that's one experience that I really regret not having got to enjoy in my career. Looking forward to this one. I think this is going to be a great series too. I actually am picking the Panthers to win in seven.
All right. Well, I'll take Tampa then. Just because of the defending champs, they get Stamkos, they get Kucherov back. I know Hedman is a little banged up and is playing through something. But I'll go Tampa. But I'm excited. Like, honestly, I am legit excited about that series. Not just because it's Alligator Alley and the Sunshine State and everything else, but I mean, two awfully good hockey clubs this year.
Yeah.
So serve it up. Looking forward to that one. And we'll continue to, yeah, at least one eye on the playoffs as we continue to break down the Vancouver Canucks, the four games to go. And then what kind of fallout, whatever the fallout is, we'll be all over it once the season ends on Wednesday afternoon.
All right. So we disagree on Caps Bruins.
Yeah.
The Battle of Alligator Alley.
Yeah.
And Minnesota Golden State. Or right. Minnesota Golden State. Golden Knights. So that's good. We've got three clash series to track. And, you know, I suspect we'll do a lot of Leafs talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of Leafs talk coming. And lots of talk about the Avs jorts.
There we go.
Maybe I should like them because they're the team that wears jorts.
You should. You should be all over that.
Okay. Maybe, you know what? Now I'm going to try watching their first playoff game and trying to think of their pants as jorts and see if it changes my opinion. I suspect it won't. I'm really excited, though. Like, honestly, I was thinking about Sunday night's game.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'm excited to be able to watch a playoff game at 4:30 and then go to the rink. Like, that's going to feel very bubble hockey.
Yeah, I suppose so. It still will never make any sense, but you're right. There will be, I think there's an early game, like a morning game.
There's a 9 a.m. game, yeah. But I've got a puppy play date, so I can't watch that one. I'll watch the third, maybe. Well, unfortunately, I'm missing the Islanders.
You mentioned your jorts. Another guy that is fashion forward, just check him out on his website, Eddie Lack. He joins Craig Custance on the Full 60 this week at the Athletic. So you can hear from the Canucks' former backup netminder. He was the number one guy for a while there as well. Former Canucks netminder. I shouldn't diminish his time here in Vancouver, but now selling high-end real estate down in the Phoenix area. Eddie Lack with Craig Custance on the Full 60.
He single-handedly carried the Canucks to their last playoff berth over an 82-game season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it feels like a long time ago to be saying that, eh?
It was, yeah. We read a couple of comments from our comments section, and we asked for the feedback. Love to hear it. I certainly scour the feedback comments section. So check out our comments section. Every podcast episode at the Athletic app has one. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple if you're not already a subscriber. Go to theathletic.com/VanCast. Receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. We'll be back on Monday, the Canucks playing Saturday and Sunday, so we'll have two more games and whatever storylines present themselves, and we'll be two games closer to the very end. The final four here for the Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton, and then those three in a row against the Calgary Flames. For Drancer, it's J-Pat. Thanks, as always, for sticking with us here at the VanCast at The Athletic and TheAthletic.com.
It's Louis Domingue season, baby!